Sometimes in our journey, our spiritual journey, our Christian life, that is exactly how it feels, isn't it? When God's working in our life, He kind of has to hold us down on the ground and do what He's got to do. And it's not pleasant. And many times it's extremely difficult. I remember many years ago, I had a dear friend, a couple, was in another state in which my wife and I lived. We were very young at the time, and we were expecting our first child. They were just a little bit ahead of us. And I showed up at church one morning. I was going to do the music, and I had to make a special announcement to pray for this couple because they had to rush her to the hospital and begin a cesarean on her with no anesthesia. They had to get the baby out very, very fast because the mother's life was in jeopardy and the baby's life. In other words, they began to cut her belly open with a knife with no anesthesia. It hurts. And sometimes that's exactly how it feels like in a Christian life. To be honest, when God works in our life and when God brings things into our life, usually it's without Novocaine. Usually it's without the assistance of some kind of pain block. And God uses pain in our lives, but it's not pleasant at the time. And it makes it very, very difficult for us to believe. It's one of the great reasons why it's so hard to believe sometimes. Why it's so difficult and we struggle with the realities that we're dealing with in our life. And last week we started this series, Why Is It So Hard to Believe? And we talked about three factors that affect our belief. So I'm going to flip them around a little bit tonight, because usually it starts with circumstances. Some sort of circumstance. It might be our health. It might be financial. It might be relational. It's some event or something that comes into our life and unsettles us and then causes two other reactions. They can come inversely. Emotions or thoughts. And they stir us up and they unsettle us, and the mind gets to going and the emotions get to going and our feelings get to going. Sometimes those feelings can be anger. Those feelings can be disappointment. Those feelings can be despair. Those feelings can be very oppressive. Those feelings can be great insecurity, overwhelming anxiety. You name it, you've probably experienced it. And it becomes this vicious cycle. And it's almost like a giant fog comes into our life. Almost like a solar eclipse of the sun. And even though the sun is in the sky, and those of us that lived in Minnesota know this in the winter, you get these cloudy days, and you know the sun's there, but you've got that brutal wind. And that dark, ominous, gray sky. And sometimes it can last for weeks in Minnesota. And you almost forget what the sun was like. And the same is true in our lives as we try to develop our faith and as we walk with God. These circumstances come into our life. It's like a giant storm, and it just blocks out the Son of God in our life. It blocks out all the things that in our heart, just a few days ago, we knew were true. We believe were true. But now all of a sudden, the cold wind of life changes, doesn't it? You know, it's amazing. I don't know, maybe it got up to 40 today. But did you get the feeling like you just wanted to take your coat off and your shirt off? And I bet there was even some people in the U of M campus with shorts on. It happens every year. Except when you start in August and you get to October and it hits 40, everybody's freezing. Why is that? It's because now we've been so used to the cold and the kind of the gray sky, that all of a sudden the sun's hanging up a little bit in the sky and it's bright and there's hardly a cloud in the sky. It gets 40 and it feels like, wow, this is awesome. This is awesome. And the same is true again in our spiritual life, in our walk with God. We're going along in our life, and all of a sudden, some event or a series of events, circumstances come into our life, unpleasant circumstances. See, to be really honest, I think we all know this, but maybe it's kind of unspoken. It really does not take a lot of faith when times are good. It really doesn't test our faith at all. When times are good, everything's just going your way. Job's going great. Relationship's going great. Your health is going great. And you just feel like you're walking around a blessed person, like you have a charmed life. And then the challenges start. Sometimes they're small. Sometimes they're overwhelming. Sometimes they seem like they're never going to end. And I've experienced in my life thus far, 35 years of following Christ, I've experienced the small ones, the medium-sized ones, and the really big ones. The ones that make you feel like I'd just rather be dead. I love the Bible. One of the reasons I love the Bible, I know many people think, oh, just because you're a pastor, you know, you're supposed to say that. No, I'm saying that because I love the honesty of the Bible. In Song of Solomon, Song of Solomon says, vanity, vanity, all is vanities. What does a man gain from chasing the wind? From all his accomplishments, it's like trying to grab the wind. And then he goes on to say, to be honest, it'd be better if I was stillborn. It'd be better if I'd never been born. And there's a lot of truth in that some days. There are days in my life, and these the last 6 months, I've experienced some of those days. I've just thought to myself, you know, it would have just been better if I'd never been born. For the first time in my life, and I say this is the honest truth, first time in my married life as a father, during the last 6 months, since last September, there have been days, and I would say even weeks at a time, that I actually wished I'd have listened to Paul's advice and stayed single. Now, that wasn't Paul's literal advice. He was saying if you had the gift to be single, stay single. I obviously didn't have the gift. But I never thought I would wish I never had kids till the last 6 months. You see, because when you love someone so much, there's this new opportunity for pain to come in your life through those individuals. And if those individuals hadn't been in my life, I wouldn't have had the pain. It wasn't that all of a sudden I just hated my family or hated my children. It wasn't that. It was just I kind of wished, you know what, Lord, I never thought I'd think this, but I just kind of wished I never became a dad. Then I wouldn't have to be going through this. And my daughter wouldn't have had to be going through this because she wouldn't have been born. Then there were other days that I just thought to myself, you know, Lord, I just wished I was dead. I don't mean like, you know, I was staring at a revolver at the table. I just mean I wished I was dead. I just wish, Lord, you just take me home. Just like right now, I just wish I could click my heels together and say heaven 3 times. And just, boom. You know, like there's just this magic word you say as a Christian that only you get to know after you're a Christian. And you only get to use it when it's really bad. And you use that magic word and you're gone. To be with the Lord, you know. But of course, there isn't that magic word. And of course, even though there's times I felt like, Lord, I wished I was gone, I'm not going to take my own life. And so the only other option you see is faith. The only other option to deal with life is, okay, how do I get through these doubts? How do I get through, Lord, this storm? Without caving in, without giving up that which is really the most precious to me, how do I manage? And I want to talk with you about that this evening. Okay? How do we get through the doubts and the feelings that make it so hard to believe? And I just want to cover a few things with you tonight that have been in my own journey. Again, I have been following Christ as long as most of you have been alive. And longer than at least half of you have been alive. So, not to be in any way braggadocious or arrogant, But let's just say I've learned some real genuine lessons in the arena of really difficult experiences, whether they were health experiences, relational experiences, financial experiences that were greatly difficult, that came out of nowhere, just threatened to overwhelm me. I've learned some things, and I continue to learn some of those same lessons, but in deeper ways. The first thing that I've discovered is found in Psalm 78. And I just want to read some of this to you, and then I'll comment on it. Oh, my people, listen to my teaching. Open your ears to what I'm saying. For I will speak to you in parables. I will teach you hidden lessons from the past. Stories we have heard and know. Stories our ancestors handed down to us. We will not hide these truths from our children, but we will tell the next generation about the glorious deeds of God. We will tell of His power, the mighty miracles He did. He commanded our ancestors to teach them to their children so the next generation might know them. Even the children not yet born, and they in turn might teach their children. So each generation can set its hope freshly on God, remembering His glorious miracles. Then they will not be like their ancestors, stubborn and rebellious and unfaithful, refusing to give their hearts to God. For they forgot what He had done, the wonderful miracles He had shown them. I want to talk about that. You ever notice how easy it is to forget? Let's just use again winter. How many times in the middle of summer when it's about 90 we go, oh my gosh, I just wish it was colder. And then it's really cold and we forgot how nice it was to have that 90 degree day. And we just think to ourselves, sometimes you get in the middle of winter and people actually get depressed, thinking like, it's never going to end. Of course it's going to end. Don't you remember what we went through the summer? Of course it's going to end. It's going to be over. It'll be done with. But it's very easy to forget. Sorry. I've been having trouble with the cough. It's very easy in our Christian experience with God to forget what He's done. So the first thing that I want to point out to you is one of the first ways you're going to overcome your doubts when the circumstances of life are not what you wish they were is to remember what God has already done for you and keep a record of them. I have a book at home that I've been writing over the years. Now, it's not comprehensive and it doesn't have every single detail, but I could tell you story after story after story, real life situations of answered prayers, of God bailing me out at the last minute, of God coming through for me. You know, I have a very interesting story, and I don't have time to give you all the details tonight, but I just want to share with you just a few highlights of some of the realities that I've seen God do in my own life. I graduated from high school in 1975. I never went to college. I never went to seminary. I never went to Bible school. I became a machinist, and I began following Jesus Christ when I was 19 years of age. I believe God wanted to reach the world with the gospel of Jesus Christ. I believe God wanted to use me in the lives of other people. I believe God wanted me to become a pastor. I got with a group of Christians that trained pastors within their local church. And I got involved. I was involved for years and years. I was working jobs. I went through the Carter years. The last recession we had before this one was actually worse than the one we're presently in. And I couldn't find a job as a machinist. And God just kind of strung me along. My wife and I eventually, my fiance, got married. I had no insurance with my first three children. The most I ever made was $13,000. My third child was born. We were in car accidents. God came through. God gave us a house. God gave us cars. And the life verse that my wife and I lived by was Matthew 6:33. Seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. My wife and I borrowed a car to go on our honeymoon. We went on the honeymoon with a few cash dollars that we took out of the envelopes. We went to Devil's Lake in Wisconsin. Probably not the right place to go. We had some bizarre experiences there, but that's another story for another time. And we stayed in these little motels along the country roads. God allowed all four of my kids to go to college. They're all following Christ. They're all serving the Lord. You know all of them. I wasn't born into wealth. I haven't received an inheritance. But God has taken care of us time and time and time again. 23 years ago, I moved here, and Brent and I, at the time, we were probably making about $17,000 or $18,000 a year. We decided to start a church. We planted Evergreen Community Church in 1988, and now there's 14 pastors, there's 5 locations, a 6th one in Berlin, Germany. There's about 2,000 people, and there have been thousands besides that that have come to know Jesus Christ. All of that was done through faith. There was no one to finance us. No one like we do now when we raise money to start the church plants. There weren't that. We were meeting in a $300 auditorium off of 46th Street, Regina Auditorium. And then we moved to Bloomington where I found an auditorium. But they wanted $3,000 a month and not $300 a month. And we had to step out on faith. And there was only 80 of us at the time. And God came through and we began to grow and we began to grow and we began to grow. And I could tell you story after story after story. I have them in my book. Little sentences that open up a whole file in my brain of what God did. Of God's provision. Of God coming through. And yet even at times with those stories, it's easy for me when the clouds, the storm sort of life envelop me, it's easy to forget the sun. It's easy to forget, oh yeah, God, you did those things. Yeah, Lord, you're faithful to what you said you would do. It's part of why I wrote them down. It's so important that you remember what God has done for you. And of course, when all else fails, I go back to the cross. I go back to the cross. I go back to Calvary. I go back to there Jesus Christ died for me. I go back to all the amazing circumstances, how God orchestrated my life in 1975 in that fall through that little sports car that I had and almost took my life, but He spared my life and caused me to meet this Christian who had this car just like mine, but they were very rare. How did that happen? Because God did it and God worked in my life. I go back to the story. I go back to how I met my wife. I play that story over and over. When I have doubts, I play the old stories. I play the old stories. Second thing that I find to be incredibly helpful, though again, I have to at times literally fight almost hand-to-hand combat with Satan himself to believe these things. I don't know if you've ever felt that way. Sometimes it's not the devil I'm fighting with, it's me. It's me I'm fighting with. It's almost like I'm reaching up my own brain, grabbing my mind, but my mind's grabbing me, and we're wrestling back and forth, back and forth. But no, this is true. No, it sure didn't feel true. And it's kind of like that, you know, the devil on one shoulder, the angel on the other. And I go to this passage in Jeremiah chapter 32. Jeremiah, as you know, you may not know much about Jeremiah. He was a prophet to the nation of Israel. And he suffered an incredible amount of persecution, of ridicule, and of deprivation because he tried to honor God. And he says here, Jeremiah's prayer in Jeremiah 32. O sovereign Lord, you have made the heavens and the earth by your great power. Nothing is too hard for you. You are loving and kind to thousands, though children suffer for their parents' sin. You are the great and powerful God, the Almighty. You have all wisdom and do great and mighty miracles. You are very aware of each of your children, and you continue to do great miracles in Israel and all around the world. You have made your name very great as it is today. And I just go over that in my mind. One of the things that I run back to on a regular basis is, what is God really like? Not what do I feel like right now, but what is God really like? See, sometimes what happens is the circumstances that come into our life, they diminish our view of God. They all of a sudden shrink God from this great and powerful God into this like a little tiny like, you're nothing, God. I mean, and our mind starts to go like this. You know what, God? Like, if you were so powerful, am I asking for very much here, Lord? I'm not asking for the Red Sea to open. I'm just asking for a job. And I'm not asking, Lord, for my dead brother to raise from the dead and come out of the tomb. I'm just asking, Lord, how I can make rent this month. I'm not asking you, Lord, for new legs on my, you know, my little child has no legs. I'm just asking, can they at least get well? You know? And so all of a sudden, this war that goes on in our mind, it can diminish our view of God. And you see this so often in the Old Testament. It's a beautiful thing. You see them go back to the greatness of God. Nothing is too hard for God. And that sometimes is not easy to believe. It's not easy to believe. Because like I said, for all of us, there's going to come a time where there already has, and there's going to be more, where we look at a thing and we go, well, Jesus, Lord, you're not doing nothing. Oh, maybe this one's too hard. Maybe this one's too hard. Maybe we finally got one here that, Lord, you just can't handle. And so I go back and I review what I know about God. I remember that God doesn't change. He doesn't change. Our circumstances change. Our friendships change. Even we change. Our feelings change. One day, you know, I don't know. Maybe I am. I don't. You know, I have extreme emotions. I don't necessarily like them. And I'm saying everybody else should have them. But especially this last 6 months, is some days I just feel like I'm carrying 1,000,000 pounds on my back. And then there might be a day that I just feel like I'm flying on the clouds. And I'm not using anything either. I just want you to know that. My body is a temple and I put nothing negative or bad in it. Except chocolate, Dove chocolates. I gained like 6 pounds since my wife came home. I didn't tell you this, but my wife, you know, well, you got my email that I sent out, I think, to the house churches. So about 7 weeks ago, for 3 weeks, she went out to San Diego for 3 weeks. While she was gone, it was a beautiful, well, it wasn't a beautiful thing. I missed her every day. But what was beautiful about it was I got down to the same weight I was when I graduated. And part of that, I got to admit to you, was great sorrow. It was because of sorrow. It was because I was too overwhelmed to eat. So I got down like to 141 pounds. Just like that. All I did was breathe a little and I put on 7 pounds. I'm like, oh, this is pathetic. Of course, part of it was I started eating Dove chocolates again. And so now I got to remind myself every time I look at one, you're going to wear it, Mark. You're going to wear it. If you eat it, you're going to wear it. That's what I'm telling you, this is what happens when you reach a certain age. You reach a certain age, and whatever you eat, you wear. And you wear it in these places that you don't really want to wear it. So I won't comment on that anymore. Anyway, we may change, but God does not. Third thing that I found to be extremely helpful is I focus on the things that I do know, the facts and the evidences that I have of God's faithfulness and of God, instead of focusing on what I don't know. There's a lot of things I don't have answers to. I have whys just like you do. I think you do. If you're honest, you do. You probably have like why, Lord? Like why did I have to be born in that family? And well, why did my car have to break down there? I was going to bring my notebook tonight. I didn't, but because I knew I'd take too much time. But I was going to read to you trial after trial after trial that's happened during this 6-year period of my life. And I was reading over it today. My wife, she doesn't really like to go over these things, but I like to go over them. I don't know. Sometimes pity party makes me feel good. I don't mean a pity party. What it does is it helps me realize why I've been feeling these overwhelming emotions. Because it's like, I realize, you know what, God? I'm just being honest here. I dated these things, Lord. I dated them when they happened. See, I'm not being a baby, Lord. This is called piling on. See, it wasn't just that my daughter was sick, Lord. It wasn't just that. It was these other 27 things as well. See, I'm not making them up, Lord. Dated them, Lord. Dated them right here. Dates. Of course, at the same time, I had another sheet of my book, page after page of all the extraordinary provision of God during the same 6-year period. And that was really encouraging, too. And so I had these two contrasting things, the trials, but on this page, the way God provided to get through to here. And now there's been some pretty amazing things happening. I'm not going to comment on them tonight, but a number of them in the last 7 weeks. And I'm starting to jot those down. And the amazing timing, sovereignty of God, of things that are just so bizarre. But in a good way bizarre. I got to admit, I was doubting him. I was kind of getting to the point like that I was almost like resigning myself. You know what, Lord? Nothing good's ever going to happen again in my life. I mean, that's pathetic, but that's true. I mean, that's extreme. But I was at times at that point. I'd just be sitting at my desk going, you know what, Lord? This is just, who am I even fooling? This just isn't going to change. I guess that's what you're saying to me. This just isn't going to change. And all of a sudden, God began to change. And I'm very, very thankful for the thousands of friends that I've had that have been believing God, in a sense, almost for me. That have been trusting God around me and praying for me when my faith was small. Even though I got to tell you, not a day has gone by that I haven't prayed. Not one day in 6 years. Not one day in 6 years almost that I've spent an hour praying. Sometimes it was crying the whole time as I was praying, but I was praying. Asking God to work. The fourth thing, I only got a couple more and then we'll be done, is to review and focus on the consolations of God. In Psalm 94, verse 19, there's a verse that I reflect on often. When doubts filled my mind, there again, you see, I didn't think people of God doubted. Yes, they do. It's right in the Bible. When doubts filled my mind, your consolation, your comfort gave me renewed hope and cheer. One of the things that my wife and I do, I see my wife do it actually every day, every single day. My wife has these notebooks, and in these notebooks, she writes verse after verse after verse. And my wife is not nearly as talkative as I am. Unless she gets around her girlfriends, then she gets really talkative. But she's not nearly as talkative as I am. But I don't write nearly as much down as my wife does. So one day, Kathy was gone. Might have been when she was going to San Diego, but I don't remember. It might have been one day she was just gone, and I went up and I grabbed some of her notebooks. Now, you got to understand, we have a very close relationship, so I can read anything she writes. She doesn't mind. And she doesn't have one of those diaries. These are not like diaries. These are like journals of her walk with God and thought after thought, verse after verse. So I'm reading these pages, and all of a sudden, I just start crying. I'm like, my gosh, this woman is so deep. I mean, these are really good thoughts. I mean, I'm getting really encouraged sitting here reading her secret notes. I had to do this more often. Where does she get these verses? I didn't know that verse was in the Bible. I mean, I'm a pastor. I've read the Bible many, many times. But I don't know, she seems to have these secret verses that she finds. And she like triple underlines a couple words. And I'm like, I've never seen it like that before. And then she'll write these thoughts, and then she'll write prayers below them. I have in my Bible orange underlines. I have a number of different Bibles. And I underline, and I underline, and I go read. Sometimes I just read the orange underlines. They're promises from God, or the comforts of God, or the encouragement of God. And I remind myself of the consolation that God, you're God, you don't change, and you promise to do me good, and you keep your promises. And I go and I read the Gospels, and I see how you help these people. And Lord, I know it's just a matter of time, but that's the problem, Lord. I've been waiting, and that's what's hard. You see, that's what tests our faith, is that four-letter word that is the worst in the English language. W-A-I-T. It's the worst. There isn't a swear word to me worse than that four-letter word. Wait. Wait. That's been the story of my walk with God. I had to wait 11 years to become a pastor. I had to wait 3 years almost to get married. And it was wait and wait and wait. Oh, wait for this. Oh, wait for that. Wait. Wait. Waiting 6 years for my daughter to get a little bit better. But in the middle of all that was the most excruciating stress and strain that I've ever experienced in my life. And it's that waiting, see, that makes it hard to believe. And so when we're waiting, we got to open this book and go read your underlines. And if you don't have any, start getting some. Do what my wife does and get a journal, a notebook, open it up and start writing down. So you can go back to the book that you've written and read those verses and take comfort and encouragement from them, or you're not going to make it. And the last thing I want to share with you is this. This has been a huge part of my relationship with God. I've told you all this before, so I'm not going to talk at length about it, but I felt it was very important to say. It is impossible to have a relationship with anybody that you do not talk to. You cannot have a relationship with people that you do not communicate with. Whether it's through email or texting or phone or snail mail or face-to-face conversation. If you do not talk, you do not have a relationship. You will not be able to sustain faith if you do not regularly talk to God and talk things over with God. And this has been one of my saving graces, is learning to dump on God, learning to interact. The Bible says in Psalm 62 that God is a refuge, therefore we are to pour out our heart to Him and trust in Him. Now it's very interesting. You see, when you trust somebody, you talk. When you trust somebody, you share your heart. When you trust somebody, you share what's really on your mind. Good or bad. You talk it over because you trust them. And you allow them, because of your trust, to speak into your life. And you find them to be a source of strength, of refuge. My wife, for me, in many ways, has been my rock. She is my balance. I really don't know. I know many of you do not know my wife, but you wouldn't have to meet her very long to probably realize, wow, Mark really needs this woman in his life. But I really do. I would not be a balanced individual if I did not have Kathy in my life. I don't know how I would have made it through these 35 years. And I really thank God that He brought her into my life. But even more than that, I did not know what I would do if I could not talk to God. Because when I get overwhelmed with things, when life hits me, I got to have somebody to talk to. And I made a personal covenant 35 years ago that I'm not going to be the person who calls up all these friends, so to speak, and dumps on them. I'm going to learn to dump on God. I'm going to talk to God. I'm going to go to God. Because He's the wonderful counselor. See, He's the one who can handle all of these emotions and all of my questions. And let me just say, and I want to make this very clear. I've demonstrated this before. I'm not going to tonight. But when I say talk to God, I mean the good, the bad, and the really ugly. Listen, I know some of the awful things that go through your mind and some of the colorful language that passes through your mind, even if it doesn't come off your tongue. Guess what? God knows it too. You might as well say it. So, you know, there have been times that I've said to God, you know, God, this is just a pile up. Doo-doo. Let's just say I used another colorful word. And I don't really care what you think. Because God understands my heart. And God knows who I am. And God knows what I'm not. And it's been these honest conversations with God. It's been these just gut-wrenching, gut-honest conversations with God, whereby... You guys know what a catheter is? Okay, you do. So, have you ever heard someone say that was very cathartic? How many have heard that word before? Raise your hand because you're all geniuses out here. All right. We've got a few YouTube geniuses. So... cathartic. It was very cathartic. It means that it was like someone put a catheter in me and let all the garbage out. Cathartic, catheter, get it? You understand? Okay? So this is what we call cathartic prayer. It's the kind of thing that, I don't know if, I hope you never have to have a catheter. I haven't, by the way, yet, but I'm sure hoping I don't. I was supposed to go in one time for a prostate exam. I did go, by the way, but not for this particular one. So I was supposed to set up this appointment right at this urology place. But before I could do it, the lady called me on the phone. Well, it was a lady of all people to call me on the phone. I didn't know who it was. I said, "Hello, this is Mark." She said, "Yeah, I'm with blah, blah, blah. Mark, I'm Mr. Darling. I'm going to set up your appointment." I said, "Oh, well, okay. Well, can you tell me, what is this appointment like?" She goes, "Well, you know, we put a tube in your urethra." I'm not one for real technical medical terms, so I ask a different question. And she said, "Yep, that's what we do." And I said, "You know, I don't mind peeing four times a night. That's okay. Just cancel my appointment." But let me just say something. If I had to go potty really, really bad, and it had been days, and the only way was a catheter, I guess I'd take it. And here's what I'm saying to you. I hope you never have to have a catheter, but you better believe you need one almost every day with God. And if you're not a person who's used to communicating with God, what's really on your heart, what's really on your mind, you're not going to heal. You're not going to heal on the inside. You are going to be an imbalanced individual. You will never discover emotional health until you learn to go to God, get away. There are a lot of ways to do it, by the way. I've discovered a new one recently. It's expensive, but I do it anyway. Because I've been having trouble with my feet walking. I love prayer walks, and it's been cold. I get in my car, and I drive from my house down 35 at 60 miles an hour. I hate going slow, too, so you know this is really important to me. I put the cruise at 60. I drive down to the Northfield exit, turn around, and come back. It takes me exactly an hour. And I cathartically pray the entire time. Usually I do that three times a week, otherwise it gets a little expensive. And otherwise I go in my garage, my office, or down the basement. If I didn't do that, I'm going to be very frank with you. All the garbage, the waste products of life would build up in my soul, and I'd be a bad man. And you're the same way. You just don't get it. You just don't understand it. You need to go get rid of that stuff. You need to go have an honest conversation with God and then allow God to begin to work over your soul. I'm going to close with a simple story. The way I learned this changed my life. I hope I don't embarrass my wife. I've probably already done that, so it's too late. My wife and I, we've been married about 3 years. We lived in this little trailer. And our first couple years of marriage were pretty volatile at times. Well, obviously, I can be volatile. And she can be stubborn. And I can be stubborn. So this one particular day in the trailer, it was winter. We had, I think, two children at the time. And I could tell that this moment was going to start to escalate. I could feel it. It was starting to rise in my body. I was getting a little hotter. I was getting a little heated. And there was a lot of things I wanted to say. And I'd really been trying to work on my temper, which is a constant thing I'm always trying to work on. So this particular day, I remember I just, you remember moon boots? No, most of you probably don't. But anyway, they were these tacky looking fat boots that were really cheap, lightweight, but they keep your feet warm. So I had a pair, and I never wear a hat, but it was so bad that day I had to put on a hat. So I grabbed a hat, I grabbed my gloves, I grabbed my coat, and I said something loud. I said, "I got to get out of here. If I don't get out of here, I'm just going to explode. And I don't want to do that, so I'll be back." So I walked out in the snow. I went way down the hill of this trailer park we lived in, down in the woods, down in the creek. And by now, of course, I was fuming as I walked. And the more I walked, the more fuming I was. And I picked up this stick and I slammed it against the tree and I said something, I'm sure, flowery and whatever. And then I just stopped, and I was just so incensed. So I started to pace. I'm a pacer, so I'm pacing back and forth. And my mind is just going a million miles a minute. And it's not pleasant up here right now. There's a lot of really icky things up there right now. And finally I stopped and I thought, you know, who am I fooling? What an idiot. I might as well just tell God what I'm thinking, because He sees my thoughts like their words. And I really need to say this to somebody. So I'm just like, you know what, God? And I'm starting to lose my voice, but I wasn't losing my voice that day. And I'm just, you know what, God? You stuck me with a lemon. I am so sick of this marriage. Why the hell did I ever get married? This is a bunch of crap. And I'm just, you know, I'm walking back and forth. And I'm just telling God everything I feel, the things you really shouldn't say to your spouse. Let me just put it that way. These are not things you want to say to your spouse. So I'm going back and forth, talking to God. Pretty soon, I'm winded, believe it or not. I'm kind of, all the urine is out. And all of a sudden, it's all out. God starts talking. And pretty soon, you know, tears start welling up my eyes, and God's reminding me, you know, Mark, you know, you're lucky she hasn't left you. You're lucky that you have a woman that loves you this much. You know how lucky you are. Do you remember, don't you remember how I brought you into her life? Or brought her into your life? And I'm thinking about this, man, tears just starting to stream down my face. I'm like, you know what, Lord, you're right. And you know what else, Lord? I provoked the whole thing. I didn't have to provoke that whole situation. And so that's right, Mark. But Mark, I love you. Now, Mark, listen, you walk right up that hill, go into that kitchen, and just say these words, Kathy, I was wrong for being so provocative. Would you forgive me? I don't care what she said to you. I don't care if she was wrong, Mark. All that matters is just go make peace. I'm like, okay, Lord. So I walked up that hill and I made peace. Now listen, this is very important. When you're a young couple, things like happened between us could last for a week. They could certainly last for a day. But this particular day, it lasted 45 minutes. Because the escalation started about 15. I got out of the house. I went down and talked to my therapist. He helped me get a new perspective. I got rid of all the junk. And I came back, made it right, and guess what? We had a nice day. If you don't learn to do this, you're not going to make it. You're not going to make it. Instead, what's going to happen is you're going to become bitter, and you're going to become resentful, and things are going to eat away at you. These are five things you can do to keep your faith alive in tough times. Let's close with a word of prayer, and I want to let you know next week we're going to do something a little special. I have a very dear friend here that I've asked to share his story next week. He's one of our house church leaders, and he has, in my view, an unbelievably compelling story of faith in the midst of what was an extremely difficult year and difficult trial. And I think you're going to find it so encouraging for you personally. And I want to invite you back next week to hear Jason's story. So let's bow our heads for a word of prayer. Father, we just thank you so much for your goodness to us, that in the midst, Lord, of our great difficulties, you're still a good God. And I confess to you, Lord, I acknowledge to you freely, there are times I just didn't believe that at all. There are times that I just said, you know, Lord, seems to me like you're being a little sadistic. Seems to me, Lord, like you like a little bit of this pain too much. But I want to tell you, Lord, I thank you that you put up with my foolish stupidity. And I admit to you, Lord, that at times I've been foolish and stupid. But I just thank you, God, that like a father, the Bible says, just as a father is compassionate towards his little children, so the Lord is compassionate to us. You understand, Lord, that we're like little children. And you're trying to grow us and you're trying to help us. I ask you to help each person here this evening in Jesus' name. Amen.